to the audio event of the century, featuring two lifelong best friends. We love the Leafs. We love each other. But most of all, we love William Nylander. Welcome to the Buds All Day.
Hello and welcome to the Buds All Day podcast. I'm Sats Mundine, yet again joined by a special guest. Tonight we have the legendary Frizzbob. How you doing, man?
Hey, buddy. How's it going? I'm good. I'm feeling good after the game. We got a couple topics we're going to get into. I'm a little pissed, not going to lie, but we'll open it up soon and we'll chat. Good to be here, though.
Glad to have you, my man. Yeah, there's quite a few talking points, not just from this game, but just from the news around it. Still some extra fallout from the Jets game, the Spezza suspension. So let's get into the game first. Now, the Leafs did win yet again, 5-4 over the Blue Jackets, a little closer than we would have liked, but they got two goals from Matthews, who I believe is up to 10 in seven games or something like that. Willie got a goal. Tavares got a goal. And Nick Ritchie finally Dick Rich, broke baby. The seal as a Toronto Maple Leaf. There we go. He was you could see the relief on his face when he got that one. So that was definitely good to see. And we won where it counts today. 56% on the deserve to win o-meter. Only 47% of the Corsi and 50% of the high danger chances. But all in all, I'd say really good start to the game. Little bit of a mediocre finish. Now, Frizz, what are your thoughts on this one?
You summed it up perfectly. Like, they were firing out from the gate. Like, the second they started the game, like, you could tell, you know, they wanted to prove that the loss against Winnipeg, which we'll talk about later, was a fluke, or, you know, doesn't encapsulate them as a team. And they were crashing and banging. They looked great. The young kids looked pretty good, you know, for the limited minutes they have. I believe they had, like, less than 6 minutes each. But it looked good. And I think, you know, the game just kind of got away from them a little bit. They were able to kind of hold on. But they looked good. Big goals from some big players. Finally got to see Ritchie score one, which was nice. But good win. They were able to hold it out, which was nice.
Yeah, and hey, if they're going to allow a last-second goal to Max Domi and drive that Jack Campbell contract down a couple thousand bucks, I mean, I'm not going to complain. We still got the win. It was funny because my dad was saying during the game, like when they got up 3-0, it became 3-1, and then they fire back with two quick goals. And my dad's like, that's kind of what's been a little different about this team this year. When the other team starts to punch back, they throw an even bigger punch, but then they go and kind of shit the bed in that third period. But at the same time, like, the game was pretty well won at that point. But I think Sheldon Keefe's definitely going to be having some probably not too kind words with his team after that final.
Yeah, they definitely kind of looked like sluggish near the end of the third there. I think they were just kind of done with it. I think I have a feeling maybe they kind of heard a little bit about Spezza's suspension, and because it kind of came out in the middle of the game. I think they had, you know, in their mind, bigger fish to fry. I feel like they thought the game was won, and they kind of let it slip away a little bit. But they were able to hold out, which was nice. So.
Yeah, I honestly, like, I tweeted halfway through. I was like, they are making Columbus look like an AHL team. Like, Wayne Simmonds, like, honestly, at points in that game, he looked like prime Wayne Simmonds. Like there was one play where he tried to get Matthews the hat trick. He got the puck at the top of the circle, and, like, everybody thinks he's going to shoot. He slides a beautiful pass to Matthews. So it was honestly some Globetrotter stuff until, yeah, you make a good point. That Spezza news perhaps could have been what maybe got the boys a little bit rattled, maybe took their mind off the game. Six games for Jason Spezza for that knee to he who shall not be named's head. Frizz, what do you think of that George Parros masterclass?
I mean, yeah, like, it's an absolute joke, man. Like, if there was any doubts in anybody's head whether or not George Parros still has a vendetta against the Leafs, like, all of those doubts were put to bed tonight. Like, you know, absolutely no precedent for a suspension of that nature for Spezza, who's never had any supplemental discipline in his, like, what was it? How many games did he play? Like 1,300 now?
I know he's over 1,000 points, so he's had to have played a ton of
games. No, he's never had one game of supplemental discipline. And I was reading some of the notes. Jonas Siegel tweeted some of the notes from the hearing, and they said that Pionk was he was like hittable, basically, was what they said. He was like lined up and it was like a good hit, not a good hit, but he was eligible to have been hit. And then in the same token, they said that it was not a good hit. So it's just like everything that they I'll have to pull up the tweet that I saw, but everything about it just doesn't really make sense. I mean, like, we saw Lemieux get 3 games. What for was it? For biting Brady Tkachuk? Like, that's...
I think he got 5 for biting, too.
Was it 5? Maybe it was 5. But still, that's, you know, much more of an...
I'll double-check that. Let me double-check that. But, yeah. But he has a history. Like,
yeah. Right, exactly. Biting somebody is a much more egregious offense than, you know, whether you want to call it targeted or not. Like, the play, Pionk was falling. I don't know if Spezza intentionally need him in the head. And, you know, given his history, how do you give Spezza more games? Like, it's ridiculous.
I did look. Lemieux got 5, but still, that's more than a guy who bit somebody. A guy who's got a, you know, kind of a history of being a maniac. Whereas you have Jason Spezza, who his only hearing, I'm pretty sure I heard this morning on Toronto radio, was actually in 2005 for something that occurred against the Leafs. He wasn't even suspended for it. Like, the other side that I can understand is, you saw how incensed Spezza was after that disgusting hit by Pionk. So you know there was something behind that, and he was just going to finish his check. I think if you, in the heat of the moment, Spezza definitely meant to plow Pionk. Do I think he was trying to target his head? Probably not. Like, it was because Pionk's falling. He's going to play the puck with his hand. It's similar to the play later on in that game where Joseph Woll kind of risks himself and takes a knee to the head from Dubois. It's a similar thing. Pionk kind of puts himself in that position. I think maybe Spezza deserves a 1 to 2 games because there is some retribution factor to it. But at the same time, like, 6 games for something with that. And then another thing that bothers me is they say there was no ill intent with the Pionk thing. They say that was just a play that happened within the game. That's why he got 2 games. But you look at the play with Wheeler and Sandin last year. Don't tell me that their Jets don't remember that. You look at the way they treat Toronto, the way that they're all amped up. You don't think they remember the last game that they played together when Sandin absolutely embarrassed their captain? So there's definitely got to be something to that. And I think the suspension should have been a lot closer between Pionk and Spezza.
Yeah, when I saw Pionk got 3, I was like, okay. When he got, was it 2 he got?
Yeah.
Yeah, 2. sorry, 2. When I saw Pionk got 2, I was like, okay, 3, I can stomach 3. Maybe even 2, I could see it being 2. I did not believe in my wildest dreams that it would be 6 games, like triple the time. Like, it's ridiculous. And good on the Leafs for appealing it because it's ridiculous. There's nothing really else you can say about it other than it's just so stupid. I have no idea. The league is in shambles right now, like with the way that they've been handling penalties, suspensions. I mean, it's been well known, you know, that the Department of Player Safety has been on one for years. Like, if you look at, even if you wanted to compare
ever since Shanahan left, man.
Yeah, exactly. No, literally. And if you wanted to look at, like, look at the Tom Wilson and was it Buchnevich when he threw him to the, or was it Panarin, threw him to the ground, helmet off. He got a $5,000 fine. Like,
and how, like I get that the Spezza play, you can say that is an intent play that is dangerous. Targeting the head is what they want to take out. If that was what they did every time somebody does something like that,
right,
fine.
Right.
I'm totally good with it. But great point. Tom Wilson, you can't tell me that slamming a guy who's not wearing a helmet onto rock solid ice is of less ill intent than what Spezza
did. Yeah, because if you watch the video in real time, because all we've seen is the still images and the slow-mo. If you actually watch it from when the play develops, Spezza has committed to the hit like at least 2 seconds before Pionk falls to the ground to hit the puck with his hand. He's leading with his knee. He's leading with his shoulder. The way you can see him, he's like leaning in to hit somebody. Like, as you see any player go to hit someone, they lean down. They get ready to, you know, explode up and make a nice big hit. As he leaned in to hit, he had already committed to the hit. Pionk fell, went to play the puck with his hand. And, I mean, he didn't even really hit him in the head. He clipped him in the chin, I think, a little bit. Got him in the chest. But, like, it's not like, you know, he did it on purpose. How can you anticipate Pionk's going to fall like that, right? Like, I definitely think you're right. Like, he meant to hit him. He meant to line him up and ruin his night. But I don't think he meant to knee him in the head. Like,
Yeah, and the Jets, before that suspension was leveled, saying that Neil Pionk was not joining the team because of concussion-like symptoms when he was suspended for a two-game road trip. Like, he's suspended for the whole road trip. He wasn't going to fly with him anyway. It's pretty convenient. He's able to play the last six shifts of the game. He's fine yesterday, but all of a sudden on suspension day, yeah, as soon as they know that, okay, he's gone for two games anyways, let's just say it's like, yeah, they're just a garbage franchise. 100%. Poverty team.
Yeah.
No airport in their city. Like, they're just, I've just had enough of the Winnipeg Jets. We had a question about this to Lebda. I want to get your take. What are you doing on March 31st when they play the Jets? In my opinion, I'm sure not a ton is going to happen because it's going to be so far in the dust, but what would you do if you're Sheldon Keefe?
Oh, buddy. Yeah. I know what I would want to do. You're you're calling up Gabriel and Clune and you're sending them out, but that's definitely not going to happen. I feel like they know they're the better team. And Keith, I think, like, we've heard in the documentary last year, we've heard him in media availability say, like, let's build Stanley Cup winning habits. A Stanley Cup winning team doesn't get involved with that next game and they just level them 4-0 and they walk out of there, you know, feeling good that they won where it matters. You know, obviously there's going to be some chippiness in the game for, you know, 100%. Might even be a tilt. You know, Simmons might try and get back at Stanley. There's definitely going to be some grit to the game, I think, than there would be for a normal game. I don't know if Keith's going to do much that he wouldn't do for any other game, just because I think this season, really, there's a lot of pressure on the Leafs to do well. And I don't know if getting into a big slobber knocker with a shit team, quite frankly, they're in like 12th in the fucking league. I don't know if he's going to want to stoop to their level. I think he's just going to want to beat them on the scoreboard where it hurts, walk out of there with a nice, tidy win, get some good hits in, get a couple scrums, maybe even a fight, but I don't know if there's going to be much else.
I agree. And I think that is the right strategy in the long run. The only thing that I actually suggested was maybe you load manage a couple guys. Maybe you keep Matthews and Marner out just, you know, to keep them safe from those goons on Winnipeg. But it's, I'm sure that it'll blow over. The league's going to be watching that game. They're going to know, like, Neil Pionk's going to know that if he does any dastardly shit next game against us, that he's going to get a lot more than a two game suspension, as he should. Now, I think that where I would leave the suspension is, do I think Spezza deserves a suspension? Absolutely. Because we saw it was retribution and maybe he could have done more to slow up. But I also really do think that I would not take back what Spezza did. I think that was so, so important to show other teams that, because we've been bullied for years, and to show teams that we are not going to put up with that anymore. And if you injure our guy, hey, you're risking your own teammates. So I think it's an important message. And Jason Spezza missing 6 games, hopefully it gets down to a lower amount. A little bit of load management, it's not the worst thing either.
No, he'll get to enjoy his Christmas break with his family and come back in the new year ready and rested.
Yeah, that's actually good timing. Yeah. I didn't
think about that. Maybe he did it on purpose after all.
Hey, it was even more of a well-planned thing than we even thought. Now, back to the game. There are a lot of guys right now on the Toronto Maple Leafs who are on absolute fire, but I think chief among those is Austin Matthews, and the way that he is playing with Michael Bunting. Man, do they, like, we've talked about it on the podcast before, but Frizz, I got to get your take. What do you think of Michael Bunting on that first line with Matthews?
I mean, he's really just solidified himself as a Hyman replacement, hasn't he? Like, just the way maybe not, you know, endearing himself to the fan base as much as Hyman has, but God, he's awfully, you know, similar in terms of play style. Almost, I would even say grittier. You know, Hyman wouldn't really ever get into that, into that business, but Bunting's in there like a dirty shirt all the time. He's getting chippy. He's on pace for 58 points, making 900K a year. Like, that's not too shabby, man.
I don't think Zach Hyman ever played at that pace on the Leafs.
He had that one year where
he may have been close last year.
He had that one year where he was out for a bit and he had like a 30 goal pace season, but it's been close. I don't know if it's ever been 58. It's been in the, maybe the, you know, high 40s, low 50s, but 58 is, that's pretty good for, I mean, even for Hyman, what he was making last year, but Bunting making 900K, like, yeah.
I mean, I would say if we had re-signed Hyman, which I didn't want to do, but like if if he put up these exact numbers that Bunting's putting in terms of raw stats, in terms of advanced stats and all of that stuff, and just the eye test, if you just put a Zach Hyman jersey on him, I don't think a lot of people would have known the difference. The only time they may have is on that Austin Matthews goal, the beautiful, but like behind, no look, through the legs pass to get it right on Matthews for one of the easiest goals he's ever scored. Like, I know Zach Hyman, he did show like some unexpected skill last year. I remember that goal against Edmonton that he had, but Bunting is showing me, like, I was a huge Bunting guy coming into the year. He has blown my expectations out of the water.
Yeah, when we talked about it on our pod, the Leafs Are Bust, and when they signed him, no one really had like super high expectations for him, right? Like, he had a great shooting percentage last year in Arizona, and you know, obviously that wasn't going to continue. And we even said at the end of the day, you know what? If he ends up being like a 25-point player who can get dirty and can maybe fight or, you know, throw a big hit, you have a 900K guy who's scoring 30 points, throwing some hits. Like, you're exactly right. He's exceeding expectations in every single way. He's, you know, showing his skill. He did a great Marner impression with that pass, like great offensive awareness. And he's able to get into the, you know, into the corner, scrum it out and, you know, get under the skin of, he's like, you know, he's like our, everybody wants Tkachuk. Everybody wants Tkachuk. He's, you know, showing his Tkachuk side, right? Like getting in there, getting dirty. He's able to make nice plays, take hits, make hits, block shots. Like he's the dream Hyman replacement.
And for 1/6 of the cost, I think that like this was the direct comparison I drew when he signed along with Kasha. I said, those guys have the potential to be our Blake Coleman and Barkley Goodrow, and they have more than lived up to the expectations. Similar cost to those guys, both at around $1 million. They're actually cheaper than Goodrow and Coleman were on the whole. But those are the exact advantages a team needs to win a Stanley Cup on the salary cap. When you have two guys who are easily in our, I know Cash is not in the top six, but he's definitely one of our six best forwards. It's been great to see those guys all year. And another guy who was another one of those kind of signings who we were not so high on was Nick Ritchie, but with his goal tonight, 6 points in his last eight games. I mean, is he bumping up trade value? Is he proving himself more valuable to the team? Either way, it's a benefit to us.
You can never have too much scoring, right? And especially, you know, I've heard a lot of people say, you know, TV guys, color guys, you know, even people on Twitter, he's doing all the right things. He has a couple bonehead plays every now and then. You know, he finishes his checks. He makes big hits. He's had a couple nice assists. Like he's looking decent. Like it was only a matter of time before he finally got to pot one. And maybe this is where it all kind of starts coming together for him. I mean, I feel like eye test wise, he's looked pretty good. Like I said, there's defensive blunders that he makes and takes some dumb penalties. But you know what? He's one of those players, you know, like a Jake Gardner where you take the good with the bad and hope that the good outshines the bad. And right now it looks like it is six points in eight games. That's nothing to shake a stick at. Right. So if he can continue and even, you know, put up, a, you know, 20, 25, I'm all right with that.
Oh yeah. Like, I mean, at the end of the day, it's not a contract we're going to be thrilled about, but he's proving himself to be an NHL caliber forward. And you just look at the numbers like the way he has come onto that Kasha line, like, they led the team in expected goals tonight. That's very Andre Kasha of them. 66%. Like they looked solid. So yeah, I mean, it certainly can't hurt. If we are going to make a big addition at the deadline, which I actually do want to ask you a question about that later as well. He still seems to me like the most likely guy to move, but if he keeps up this pace, it's going to be a lot easier to get a team to say, hey, get this, you know, this 35-point guy, whereas before it was like, get this guy with 1 point in 16 games. That's going to be really tough to get rid of. So yeah, at the deadline. Now, speaking of that, we talked about it on our last podcast. If you're looking for a deadline addition, are you looking to upgrade that top 4D, or are you looking for a top 6?
Oh, I'm looking for a top 6 forward all day long, and his name is Philip Forsberg, baby.
You are obsessed, yes. And I can't blame you.
No. I mean, the Ds look really good. You know, all things considered, injuries, you know, they didn't look great at the beginning of the year. I think they've bounced back nicely. Riley's playing some of the best hockey I've ever seen him play. He's on pace for 66 points. Brody's come back down to earth. He did not look great at the beginning of the year either. Muzzin seems to have found his game again. Hall is less noticeably bad. And I think Sandin only getting, you know, it's only being 3 weeks for Sandin is a blessing. He'll be back. Liljegren, Dermott, we've got nice, solid depth pieces that are capable of playing, capable of shuffling them around. We saw Liljegren play in the top six, or on the second pair with Muzzin and, against Winnipeg. We have a capable core of defensemen who are young and hungry. I don't really see a need to upgrade. If the Ducks wanted to give us Josh Manson for, you know, for a good deal, I'd take him. But my target is Forsberg. Obviously, if we can't get him, which I don't know if we're going to be able to, that's the dream. But yeah, top six forward, top six left winger to be specific. Bunting has looked good, but there's guys who are better that we can get. That just gives you the opportunity to drop Bunting down, solidify the second line. A top six left winger would do the Leafs a world of good, in my opinion.
I see a lot of your points. I do think, though, if you're getting a top six winger, I think it's Kerfoot you're shuffling down, because Bunting has just been too good.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough.
Him and Matthews, they seem to have a chemistry. Like, that's no look pass. Like they're building something, and he's been a good fit. So it's a tough choice for me, because there's the question of, what if one of our top four forwards gets injured? Then you really are going to wish you had another guy. That's why Lebda and I wanted Taylor Hall so bad last year, as kind of an insurance. But at the same time, watching Justin Hall at times this year has just been enough. It's been enough to make my eyes bleed. But if you look at tonight, I was shocked. Him and Muzzin were actually at 90% expected goals for tonight. So they were better. So here's hoping they can take a step. I think I was listening to, I believe it was the MLHS podcast, and they were wondering whether, because it was rumored that Hall had like kind of an illness where he lost a fair amount of weight. So I'm wondering if the Leafs have more faith in him because they think he's got another level he can get to once he gets into full condition. But the name you mentioned, Josh Manson, sounds really enticing to me. Just have him and Muzzin as like a mean shutdown kind of guy like that. That sounds pretty tasty. And you know, a guy like that is going to do better in the playoffs, where he can pull off the Ben Sherratt, Shea Weber, BS, cross checks, trips, holds, all that good stuff.
His,
so
his dad played for the Leafs. I'm pretty sure he's an Ontario boy.
Man.
Makes all the sense in the world.
He's tempting. I think I'm looking, if Anaheim, I know they're still in a playoff spot now. If they do tend to slip, that's definitely a guy I'd be calling about. I'm sure he'd have a lot of suitors given his role that he plays, but if we can get him without giving up a whole heck of a lot, like that's the kind of addition I'm making. I think that one way or the other, though, the way this team is playing, the Leafs just need, like, Kyle Dubas, 2 years ago when they had Tyson Barrie, he refused to add at the trade deadline. He famously told Zach Bogosian's agent no, because they didn't deserve anything. This year, it's kind of the opposite. Just like last year, they're looking good. I think you got to supplement them with that one more piece to put them over.
We've never really had this discussion, and I know you were big Hall guys last year. Obviously, I don't feel the same way now, given how it all unfolded, but I actually really liked the Foligno trade when it broke, because I thought, you know what, here's a guy. The Leafs don't need any more scoring. You know, obviously, before the John Tavares injury happened, yes, before the offense went completely dead. In my head, I'm thinking, you know, all the top four guys are firing on all cylinders. We don't really need any more supplementary offense. What we need, and what we have been lacking for years, was a guy who's going to come in, lay it all on the line, do anything it takes to win. And he was, you know what? Foligno's a pretty skilled player still. Like, it's not like he's like, you know, some fourth line plug. Like, he can still play, right? Obviously, my mind has been changed based on the way that everything kind of unfolded. But I think this year is the year that Dubas kind of learns his lessons and doesn't make any of these, like, he was good, hopefully he can still be good for us type moves. Like, I think this is the year he's got to make a splash.
Yeah, that's exactly what the point was for Lebda and I with Foligno. It's that if we were trading for the Nick Foligno of 2 years before that, where he was an elite defensive player who actually put up like pretty average offense, but whether it was because he was injured or just because he had fallen off, he wasn't that same player. And then he gets injured right away. I don't know if he was already nursing that when he came to Toronto. So that was kind of our thing. And it was, I wasn't expecting an injury to our top four. like you can't expect that. But that was the biggest reason we wanted Hall. And that's why, even though I lean toward adding a top four defenseman this year right now, that's why I can see yours and Lebda's point of adding that top six forward, because whether it's an injury or whether it's just because Marner decides to go ghost again, I think you need – you could make an argument both ways. If either way, if they make one of those trades without giving up too much, I'm going to be pretty happy as a Leaf.
Yeah, and I mean, I think we all know that this is the final time, right? Like, if we don't get past the first round in a way, period, I think you're seeing something big happening at the off season next year.
I think it's going to come in terms of players.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Somebody's getting traded. And I mean, I've talked about this before. I've tweeted about it, talked about it on the podcast. Nylander's on a darling contract. Tavares is your captain. You don't trade scoring in Matthews. So, you know, Marner seems like the ideal guy. And I don't know what your thoughts about Marner are, you know, on the pod here, but he's the ideal target.
I think that is going to be the conversation that we would have. Hopefully it's one that we don't have. Hopefully they, because I really do think too, Mitch Marner included, if they get through round one, I think he explodes. It's just that mental hurdle that they have to get over. But yeah, I agree. If my bet would be Dubas stays, just from what I've been hearing kind of some of the media talk about around Leafs, even if they lose because they've seen what he's built, I think they would say, though, you have to trade one of the core four. And he's the only one that really makes sense to trade. You outlined exactly the reasons why. And it's kind of a perfect segue to the next things I wanted to get to, which is the injury list. And Mitch Marner is chief among that with the longest injury. We thought he was only going to be out for a couple games, precautionary reasons. Turns out a shoulder injury has him missing 3 to 4 weeks.
Yeah. I mean, we talk about Marner going ghost in the playoffs, but like, the Leafs don't have a fantastic record in the regular season with him out. I think they're like 7-11, I think now. 7-11-3, I think the number was. I mean, obviously, like, you know, talk shit about him all you want. He's still obviously a very valuable piece of this team when he plays the way he's supposed to. You know, obviously that's going to hurt. This is going to be the real test for this team now. You know, Kerfoot said it today. He's on the ice everywhere. He, you know, his fingerprints are all over the, you know, the score sheet most nights. He can kill penalties. He's a fantastic penalty killer. Obviously, you know, whether you want to talk about his consistency on the power play, he's obviously still a good person to have on the power play. I know, you know, sometimes I'll irrationally talk shit about him on Twitter, but obviously he's still a very valuable forward to have. It's going to be a real test. And I don't even know. Is Dermott out too? Did I hear that?
Yeah, Dermott is out for all they said was it's a less serious shoulder injury than Marner has. So Marner's 3 to 4 weeks. Dermott could be a little bit too. So yeah, they're having a tough week for shoulders, but we did get some good injury news as well. Sandin, an injury that honestly, when you see an injury like that, you think career. You don't just think year. You don't just think month. You think this could literally affect his entire career, and thankfully it didn't end up being that. Looks like he's only going to be out 2 to 3 weeks, and not just for this season, but for the future. That's huge for the Leafs because he has been absolutely dominant on the third pair.
Yeah, and it's only a matter of time before these young kids force, you know, Brass's hands and they have to start trading guys. Next year, Justin Hall will not be a Leaf next year for 100%. I don't know if Dermott's going to be a Leaf next year. He might stay. Muzzin's days might be numbered, man.
Yeah, I think you're on point with that, especially with the Riley re-signing. Like, there's two top four spots on that left side, and Riley's got one. Right now, it's Muzzin. It could – you're not wrong. I could see him being a guy that goes if he's not playing up to his full caliber.
Yeah. I mean, he has the Stanley Cup pedigree that you need. Obviously, he knows what it takes to win. I know we say that, and it, you know, sometimes people laugh, and it's like, well, everybody knows what it takes to win. It's just a matter of doing it. But it helps having that, you know, that head and that mind in the locker room. And he's obviously a great mentor probably to the young guys, good to lean on. But at that price tag, he's got an injury history. We've seen it this year. It looks like he's starting to kind of decline. I don't know if I want to see him traded. Maybe we just run the course of his, you know, contract. I don't know. Definitely going to make things interesting.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't want to trade him. More the reason I said it was because it just seems that way with the Morgan Riley deal. That's kind of how it's going to shake out, unless they can teach Sandin or someone to play the right side, which is an option. That's why I was kind of iffy on the Riley deal as it was. I thought the flexibility you could have to re-sign Campbell, give a nicer deal to Sandin and Liljegren, that kind of thing. But with the way Morgan Riley's playing, like you said, on pace for 66 points, that's 8 assists in his last 4 games. I mean, some of them have been pretty easy assists. Just pass it to Willie or Matthews on the power play and let them work their magic. But I think Riley does deserve credit as well for the way this power play is played. He's been putting guys in good spots to succeed. I'm happy with how the defense is looking right now. And you just look to, without Sandin tonight, that bottom pair, we threw in Christian Rubens in his place, and him and Liljegren are down at 40% expected goals. So it is going to be crucial to get Sandin back in the playoffs. And maybe they, depending on what the cap situation is, maybe they do just keep all these guys around, because we've seen it this year. Injuries happen, especially with a guy like Muzzin. If you're going to have him in your top four, it's nice to have a guy like Sandin who you say, you know what, worst case Ontario, maybe we do throw him in the second round game 3 when Muzzin's out for a week.
Yep. And, you know, we saw Liljegren, man. He's been getting second pair reps. He has looked far and away better than Hall has looked all year in every category, in my opinion. It's really good. We're in a really good spot this year, I think, for depth. Everybody's kind of clicking at the right time right now. If we can kind of, you know, if we can continue to play like this, man, the sky's the limit. I'm seeing people online who have been, you know, calendar Leaf haters or calendar Leaf trash talkers. They've actually been swayed. Like, some people online have been saying, this seems like it's going to be the Leafs year. And people have never said that before. I know it felt different last year because we had the easiest route to a Stanley Cup that any team could have ever had. But this year just feels different, man. It just seems like we're able to play tight-knit hockey, put games to bed, whereas in previous years, down to the final buzzer, I mean, obviously tonight's not a great example, but there's been some games where in years past, team scores a goal and all of a sudden it's, you know, 4-2 and they're pressing, they score 4-3, they take it to overtime and they lose. Like, this year just seems different. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's everybody's kind of buying in and stepping up at the right time, but they just look great. They just look great.
Yeah, you're right. It is kind of funny to say on a game where they did kind of choke it up a little bit at the end, but I'm with you. Like, when they have a 2-goal lead and it's a game against San Jose, and San Jose, guess what? I feel comfortable going to bed after the second intermission because I know they're going to keep that lead. And I think a lot of that goes into Jack Campbell. Like, just tonight too, he allowed 4 goals, but there were a number of times when it was 5-1, 5-2 where he held the door shut, and we kind of hung him out to dry a bit tonight. So hopefully they do clean that up in the next few games.
I saw somebody tweet, I forget who it was, but they said if Campbell playing the way he played against Montreal was in net against Columbus, we sweep Columbus in the play-in.
100%.
And it's not even close. Like, Campbell is everything that the Leafs have needed him to be and needed a goalie to have been. I mean, I've never really been a big Freddie guy. I don't know if you've ever seen or heard any of my Freddie takes. Not a big Freddie guy. He was great when he...
You and Lebda must align very well then, because Lebda does not like
him. Nothing wrong with him as a player. He's got a bit of an ego, I think. He was solid for us in the first couple of years when he came over. He's just not been it. And I mean, he's doing well in Carolina. He's kind of coming back down to Freddie Earth as of late. But he was just not it, man.
Yeah, I know. I never, no matter what he did, if say we re-sign him going into a playoff series, I would have never felt good with him until I saw it. Just it's very similar to how I feel about Mitch Marner. Like, except I have a lot more hope for Mitch Marner given his age, given what he's done, so, like, in, you know, in junior and in big games in the past. So I am hopeful. But yeah, it's nice to have, like, this is the most I've felt confident in a goalie since Eddie Belfour. when Eddie Belfour stole that series against the Sens, like, I feel like Jack Campbell's got that in his bag this year.
Yep. Yep. And I mean, like, we saw it last year against Montreal, man. All we needed to do was score four goals in that series, four more. And we're playing Winnipeg and probably sweeping them or maybe taking them to five.
Score games. One more. We had, yeah, literally, four different games where we score one more. Yeah. You're right.
And Matthews hit five posts, I think.
If one of those posts doesn't go in, the Leafs win in five. And how different is the whole trajectory? Exactly. Of this team?
We have such a different.
You're not calling them chokers. So let's hope we get those bounces this year. Because at the end of the day, you can have the best team in the league. It's still going to come down to a bit of luck in hockey. That's the way it is. And that's why I hate Gary Bettman's forced parity. Like, the sport naturally has enough of it. I mean, we could turn this into a 10-hour podcast if we did start bitching about old Gremlin Gary. But I think we should get into our stars of the game. So, Frizz, as the guest, this is honorary procedure. You do get to go first. So who is your number one star tonight?
I'm honored. I'm going to give it to Maddie, man. Matthews has been absolutely ripping it up. He's got 10 goals in 7 games. He looked fantastic tonight. He showed he was able to carry a line. Bunting looked great. Simmons obviously is not Mitch Marner. He looked fantastic tonight. He was buzzing around the ice all night. Giving it to Maddie.
That's a slam dunk pick, and it seems like every night he's getting at least one of the two. He has been everything we've wanted him to be lately. He's just been that complete superstar. He's maybe just a notch below McDavid at this point, but the way that he's just controlling games from start to finish, like, every night you look at the expected goal sheet, he's always above 50, usually above 60. Tonight was actually a low night for him technically at a mere 56%. Oh. So I know. Come on, man. You're slacking. 2 goals. I got to go with a man who has been slandered beyond belief on this podcast, but who came through with his first goal as a Toronto Maple Leaf, and that is Nick. 6 points in his last 8 games, Richie. Finally, it's happened to me right in front of my face. Also rocking a whopping 60% expected goals on that line with Kampf and Kasha. What can you say? You got to be happy with his performance tonight.
Yeah, he looked good.
And with that said, with that win tonight, the Leafs move to 18-7-2 for 38 points, which ties them for first in the Atlantic Division. Now, the Panthers do have 2 games in hand. Somehow the Montreal Canadiens went from winning 2-1 to losing 3-2 in the last 3 minutes tonight, which is very peak Montreal Canadiens. Unfortunately, that happened against Tampa, who is also 2 points behind us with 2 games in hand. So it is neck and neck at the top, and with every game I watch the Panthers and Lightning, or at least I check the score, I want first place in this division.
Yeah. It's going to be scary, man. It's going to be scary. You just know that the Leafs are going to get third, Panthers are going to get second, and Joe Thornton's going to score the back-breaking series winner. I'm kidding. Oh, I'm kidding. No, it. I would die.
Power play goal, too, because he was so tragic on our power play last year.
No, first place is ideal, obviously. Hey, man, what a way to solidify belief if you make it to first place and you play the Bruins and you finally get to slay the dragon. Wouldn't that be nice?
Oh, I couldn't write a better script. And then that way you only have to slay one real dragon and the Panthers or Lightning. Like, if we get second and we have to face both of those teams.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to be a gong show. So, but it would be peak Leafs to absolutely just shit all over themselves against the worst playoff opponent they've ever faced in Montreal. And then just steamroll 2 of the top 3 teams in the league. Yeah. So no matter what happens, I probably won't be surprised with this team, but I'm hoping, man. And you never know. Even the Red Wings, they're still 3 games above 500. Boston's only 4 games above. So you might be looking at a first round matchup with the upstart Red Wings. So every game is crucial. Like, I find myself at times kind of like not unimpressed, but like I'm not screaming at goals as much as I would because it just feels so expected at this point. But at the same time, these games are actually massive.
Yeah, they really are. Like, the Atlantic is so tight. Every single game matters, and like it's really a shame that we had the start we did, because some of those games, especially the fact that we're leading in games played and so many teams have so many games in hand with us, those first couple, you know, those first 10 games where we did not have a great record, like, they could come back to bite us in the ass, and they could be the difference between third or first. Like, it's so tight.
Yeah, like, the gap between finishing second or first is just, like, I cannot express it. You're facing basically a team similar to the Habs. Now, let's be serious. Boston's way better
than the Habs. They're better than the Habs.
But, yeah, it is – it's going to be huge. But, anyways, Frizz, I got to thank you a ton for coming on tonight. Really appreciate it. Now, what is your podcast called? Where can people find it? And what is your Twitter handle?
Yeah, man. So, my Twitter handle is FrizzBob, which is an L instead of an I. And then the podcast.
So for Liz Bob.
For Liz Bob, yeah. I am a co-host of the Leafs or Bust podcast with Dirtbag Daddy and Mikey Mozzarella. We release episodes every Thursday. If you're interested in checking that out. If you like Buds All Day, you'll love Leafs or Bust. We're like one and the same here. We're podcast buddies now. Yeah, it was a pleasure to come on, and we'll definitely have one of you guys on soon too.
We definitely appreciate that, man. And yeah, if you guys aren't listening to the Leafs or Bust podcast, you guys are definitely missing out. And that about does it for the Buds All Day cast tonight. So we will talk to you guys next time.